Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Again, today is the day the Lord has made. We are rejoicing. We are glad in it. We are mobilized as the people of Christ deployed into the world that he so loves as ambassadors of the kingdom of heaven with the good news of the gospel and with our hands filled with help. And sometimes hope starts with a tangible act of actually moving into the disaster of another person's life, moving into the disasters that people experience and doing so with real hope. And Convoy of Hope is a ministry, a humanitarian aid organization that does that on multiple fronts. Maybe you have seen their trucks on the highways heading into areas that people are generally fleeing from. You've seen lots of tractor trailers from lots of organizations that move in when disaster strikes. Convoy of Hope is one of those. We're privileged to have again with us today Jeff Nini from Convoy of Hope. He and I are going to talk about their response to Tropical Storm Barry. And also we're going to talk about what Convoy of Hope is doing on the southern border of the United States. So stick with us. We'll be right back here on Mornings with Carmen to talk with Jeff Nini from Convoy of Hope. Joining me now, Jeff Nini from Convoy of Hope. Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me on again.
Absolutely. So let's remind people what Convoy of Hope is and what you do.
Okay. Well, we are a faith-based organization. We're based in Springfield, Missouri, but we literally reach out around the world. We've been in, I think it's now up to about 120-some countries. We've been in 49 of the 50 states. And it's kind of a unique ministry. Basically, we use food to share the gospel, and we go in during times of disaster. We do children's feeding programs, women's empowerment, agriculture, but it all centers around providing food to people that are in desperate need and doing it through the local church.
Yeah, I love that this is a ministry that works with partners. You have 46,000 partners. In partnership with whom you've served 115 million people in more than 125 countries in your 25 years. Those are the numbers are really amazing, but every single one of those people is precious, and you fed them in a time when they literally could not feed themselves, and you helped parents feed their children and communities. You know, if people don't have the physical sustenance, they can't then turn and clean up the mess. They can't then, you know, do the things that need to be done. And so, you know, just on behalf of all the people who never got a chance to say thank you, let me just say thank you to Convoy of Hope on this, you know, 25th anniversary year, just to say thank you for all you've done and continue to do every single day.
Well, that's very kind of you. And really, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you can talk about the big numbers, which it's exciting to see what God has done in these 25 years. But it really, you know, you talk about 115 million people, but it really boils down to that one person. You know, we each have our own unique outlook on life. And you said it really well. When we are in trouble, when we can't feed ourselves, when we can't take care of ourselves, that's when we need help, and that's when organizations like Convoy come along. But again, doing it through the local church, empowering that local church to be able to reach out into their community and meet the needs in their community,
because they're going to be there long term. You're literally going to be there, you know, to in this moment of crisis. But the church is on the ground long term in the community. And so I love that you work in this partnership model. I think it is a genuinely like appropriate coming alongside, you know, it's the appropriate way for the body of Christ to work together and in a way that's not competitive, but genuinely collaborative. And I just love that. So tell us about the initial response to Tropical Storm Barry and what's already going on through Convoy of Hope along the Gulf Coast.
Sure. Well, when we got notice from the National Weather Service that Barry looked pretty serious, looked like it was going to come ashore with, with a lot of rain, a lot of flooding, things like that. So we pre-positioned supplies. We sent a couple tractor trailer loads of food, water, and emergency supplies down to that area. We have a resource center down there in Louisiana, so we were able to pre-position all that. And then as the storm got closer, we sent a team down there to be able to handle overseeing the distribution of all those supplies. And that's really what we're doing. We're working with local churches that we already have partnerships with in that area. Unfortunately, we've had to work in that area several times since Hurricane Katrina. But it's given us a good opportunity to develop local partnerships with local churches in those communities. So we set about to get this team active and working with those churches down there.
So I want to focus some attention on the southern border. We have talked a lot about what's going on the U.S. southern border. We've talked a lot about the need for comprehensive immigration reform. The one question, you know, frankly, Jeff, that most people ask is, well, what can I do to help? Like, what tangibly can I do to make a real difference? Tell us what Convoy of Hope is doing on the southern border.
Well, what we've decided, we've tried to take a little different look at it. For us, it's about the people, not the politics. And there are definitely things that need to be done down there, but that's really not our expertise. Our expertise is getting food into the hands of people that need it and working with churches. So we've had a lot of churches, churches with the NHCLC and other organizations as well that have said, hey, we're down here doing this on the border. We're trying to help. We're trying to provide food for people that need it. What can you do to help us? So that's what we've done. We've decided that we're going to get involved down there, but not on a political basis, but rather on a people basis. And we're going to say, okay, here are churches. I mean, we've heard stories about churches that are taking their building fund, spending it on food for people that are hungry. And now they're not able to build a new building like they had wanted to, but yet they're really reaching out into their communities and really trying to help people. So that's what we've decided to do, is go down there with food, water, baby supplies are in high demand. So we're working extra hard to try to get those and try to get those through churches into the hands of people that desperately need them.
All right, so let's just say there's somebody listening right now who says, you know what, I'd like to participate in that. How do they get connected with Convoy of Hope?
They can go to our website, convoyofhope.org. There's a rotating banner at the top, and when they see the picture and the text that talks about the border, they can click on that. It'll take them to that. Or if they're more interested in helping in a disaster setting, they can do that. But one of the things that we really strive to do is give donors the opportunity to give in the area that they want to help support. So if there's an area that God has really spoken to them and said, you know, hey, here's some place I want you to be involved, then they can do it in that way, and they can trust that their dollars are going to go and be invested in that response.
I think, Jeff, there are a lot of us who sometimes we either get just tired. We're just exhausted, right? Because there's just so much that needs to be done. There's so much need. The need is so great. Or we get disillusioned. But your founder, Hal Donaldson, still serves as the CEO, right, of Convoy of Hope?
Yes, he is.
And he's written a book called Disruptive Compassion that really, I think, it's so hopeful. Because it doesn't just tell Convoy's story, it actually helps us take this like daily news feed that's full of suffering and injustice, and it turns the question on each of us and is like, okay, do you see yourself as the revolutionary that, you know, God really sent you forth to be? Can you actually be the person who sows these kingdom principles into the kingdoms of this world right now? And so it's a really hopeful book. When we come back from the break, will you tell people a little bit about this Disruptive Compassion book this invitation to move beyond sort of pity and helplessness and outrage. Yeah. Okay, so we'll talk about that when we come back. Jeff Nini is with me from Convoy of Hope. You can follow them online at Convoy of Hope, and they are at convoyofhope.org. We'll be right back. What breaks your heart? That's really, I think, the question that is at the heart of the gospel movement in the world today. What breaks your heart? Because what breaks your heart is likely something that also breaks the heart of God, and it is very likely the mission to which God is uniquely calling you right now, not only in an act of mercy, but in a ministry of ongoing compassion in the world that he so loves. And so if we are genuinely the ambassadors of the kingdom of heaven, if we are genuinely agents of grace, if God has already prepared in advance all of the good works that he intends for us to do, then identifying that personal mission, that ministry, that thing in the culture that breaks God's heart, that also breaks our heart, that's our unique calling. That is, and so what does that look like in the life of a believer to actually have a vision for the world being different because of the gospel, and different because of your agency as a minister of reconciliation and grace in the world? And that story is told in a book called Disruptive Compassion. It's by the founder and CEO of Convoy of Hope. And with me today is actually Jeff Nini from Convoy of Hope. And I just hope we can talk a little bit about the book.
Oh, I'd love to. It's an amazing read, I'll tell you. Hal has written probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 30-plus books. And I was talking with him the other day, and he said these words. He said, "This is the most transparent I've ever been personally. It's what really is on the inside of me." And the book just flowed from him. So it's a great read, but it's also a challenge to us. The gospel, when Christ comes into our lives, there is supposed to be a change. And part of that change is a compassion for people in need around the world. And this book really points that out and gives you ideas and things to do, steps to take to show that compassion, to show that change.
So take us a little bit into the book. And, here's the thing. I think that there are a lot of folks, Jeff, who their heart beats against something that they see, that they know is evidence of the fall. It's evidence of brokenness. It's a rampant problem. It could be anything from child sex trafficking to the need for foster parents to the climate. I mean, it runs the gamut, right? The things that break
really
people's
does.
Heart. And so when God or the Spirit pricks my heart in such a way, and I believe that is something that I am sensing God is calling me to, there's a distance between that and the actual going. And that's what it feels mm-hmm. like the book is really about.
That's a great way to put it. I've never heard it put that way, but I love that. It is. The book is supposed to fill that gap, to give you suggestions, ideas, thoughts on how you can proceed. Because you're right. So many times God pricks our heart with something, and then we sit there and we feel bad about that situation, or we feel sorry for someone, or we empathize with them, whatever it might be. But then we don't take that next step. What is it that we do? And I think Hal's book, Disruptive Compassion, really outlines for you what some of those next steps are. It's a look at his own life and what he has done, sometimes the steps that he has taken, but it's also, it can be used as a direction for your life.
So when we talk about disruptive compassion, how do you guys define compassion at Convoy of Hope?
Boy, that's a great question. It's interesting because we don't have a standard definition. Sometimes it's different for each person. For me, compassion it goes beyond just the feeling. You know, oh, I hurt for that person who's whose house was destroyed by the storm, or I hurt for that person that's at the border, or I hurt for that person that's gone through an earthquake or a mudslide or flooding, whatever it might be. But compassion, there's a little bit of a verb to it as well. It's not just a feeling, but it's acting on those feelings and stepping out to do something. When Hal started Convoy of Hope, it wasn't a dream of this big organization. It started with a dream of helping people in a neighborhood that were hungry. And he took that step, and then that step led to the next step, which led to the next step. And it was just him following God and following God's heart and God's plan for Hal. And it took him to places that he never thought he would go. But it was always on following that next step.
So if there's somebody listening right now and they're saying, okay, I have my, you know, my heart beats in this particular way, and maybe I'm in a church that isn't too good at working as a partner with others. Like, how do I move my local congregation in the direction of this kind of collaborative ministry? And do churches reach out to Convoy of Hope if they want to connect in a particular area to, you know, to sort of to be a partner and to be an outlet? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that we do that we haven't talked about are our community events. And in those cases, we go into a community and we partner with, it could be anywhere from 20 to 60 churches in a local community. And we put on a one-day event that's designed to help people in some of the needy neighborhoods in that community. And we help them by providing food. We provide a day of entertainment for their kids. We provide medical screenings, health screenings, things like that. We bring together agencies that deal with people in need from all over that community and put it all in one central place. And it's all put together by the local churches, by a local committee. And we come along and teach them how to do this, but it's really their event. And it's a great way. We have had so many comments about churches that say, you know what, we have never done anything outside of our own four walls. It's always been about us. This is something totally different, and it can revolutionize a church. It can take that church and turn it around completely, just that one-day event, because it takes so much planning and so much working together to get to that point.
So you've just recently had a really fun, successful event in Delaware. I see that on your website, convoyofhope.org. Let's give people a quick update. I know that you have a rural compassion team, and we have a lot of listeners across the part of the country that has been flooded earlier in the year. Talk a little bit about your experience in the breadbasket of America.
Yeah, we have had flooding, and that's one of the things about living close to the Mississippi. This seems to be a regular occurrence, unfortunately. But we have had flooding all up and down the Midwest, all the way from up in the Nebraska area, all the way down into Louisiana. And it seems to be centered around the Mississippi River. There is always something to do there. But we've been able to go in, and we do it in a variety of ways. And I think that's one of the neat things about Convoy of Hope through the years, how we've expanded, but we've always maintained that ministry focus on helping people in need and using food to share the gospel. And so for us, we've been able to go into these communities, and we do it sometimes through disaster response, where we'll come in and pass out food and water and supplies. Other times it's through cleaning efforts, where we'll come in with local church teams from someplace else in the country that come in, spend a week in a community, and they'll say, okay, we're going to come in here, we're going to help people muck out their homes. People that have been flooded, we're going to come in, we're going to clean out the drywall, the insulation, the carpet, and we're going to get that home ready to be rebuilt. Sometimes it's with our rural compassion team that you mentioned, going into a rural community and teaching churches how to get involved in their communities, how to have an impact in their communities. So there's all these different avenues and connection points. But again, it all boils down to one thing, and that's getting local churches, getting the people in those local churches involved in their communities and doing something to meet felt needs, and thereby opening the door for people to be willing to talk about the gospel.
Just love it. Hey, Jeff Nini, thank you so much for what you guys are doing at Convoy of Hope. You guys can check it out, convoyofhope.org. The book is Disruptive Compassion. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back.
So welcome back. Good morning. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I have never done goat yoga. I don't even quite know what to say to that. Okay, and that's no diss to anyone who needs, like, legitimately needs a companion, right? But I hope you were listening to what John Stone Street was talking about. What we really need is the restoration of our relationship to God in order that we might be, again, restored to a right relationship with ourselves and then a right relationship with other people. So that is actually how the gospel works its way out in the life of a believer. And so let's be people who are actively seeking to help people reconnect with God in order that they might, again, be restored to a right relationship, their right mind, and then right relationships with others. Hey, next up here on Mornings with Carmen, David Aikman is back. He's the editor of Godspeed Magazine. He and I are going to talk about developments in Hong Kong. We're also going to talk about Turkey, Iran, and if we have time, Northern Ireland. All that up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Ever watch a baby bird leave the nest for the first time? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Baby humans go through a similar process, though you wouldn't recognize it at first. It typically involves things like staying out late, pushing boundaries, or hanging out with the wrong crowd. So if your teen is making some poor choices with their newfound freedom, take comfort in knowing that it's a sort of a good thing. It means they're stretching their wings and preparing to fly. Sometimes these first flights are painful for parents to watch, especially when they make several failed attempts. But be sure you're there to offer encouragement for a better flight next time, whenever your wounded teen wobbles back to the nest.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Back with us again, Dr. David Aikman, editor of Godspeed Magazine. Thank you for joining us.
Carmen, thank you for having me again.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. So over the weekend, the protesters in Hong Kong, these protests have been going on for something like 5 weeks now. This weekend, the police clashed with protesters in a shopping mall and in the suburbs. So we're no longer just talking about the peaceful, some sort of peaceful demonstration that's taking place in the streets. So what do you think comes next? I think that, David, I have this rising awareness that millions of people were basically transferred from British rule, essentially, to communist Chinese rule without their consent because of something that happened 100 years ago. And so what comes next?
Well, the Chinese Communist Party considers that anything that has traditionally been part of China should come under their control. And that includes, of course, Hong Kong and Taiwan. And the agreement between the British and the Chinese stipulated that for the 50 years of Chinese rule, things wouldn't change in the way Hong Kong was run, both politically and in terms of administration. But in fact, the Chinese government did not allow democratic elections to take place in Hong Kong in defiance of a commitment they had made under the agreement with the British, and they have been tightening the screws all over the city ever since. People of Hong Kong just don't like that. They really don't want to be under communist rule.
So, you know, I guess I find myself, you know, holding up my hands and saying, okay, if you are technically now under Chinese communist rule and you do not want to be under Chinese communist rule, what are the avenues through which, I mean, are we talking about Hong Kong seeking to become an independent nation state? I mean, what's the long-term outcome here? I don't see China easily going that direction, and I don't see the people of Hong Kong, I mean, who would arm them? I mean, like, right, they're not in a position to arm themselves. So if we're talking about dialogue, what does that look like and who's involved?
Well, it's never been the aspiration of Democrats in Hong Kong to aspire to independence from China. They realize that that's a non-starter. But the people of Hong Kong, especially the democratic politicians, consider that China's judicial system and its political system are completely corrupt, totally tyrannical, and not something that the people of Hong Kong are willing to put up with. And so the demonstrations recently took a new direction. The demonstrators started targeting the suburban stations in Hong Kong, which disgorge thousands of Chinese merchants, small merchants, to buy Hong Kong items that are cheaper in Hong Kong than on the mainland and return to China. And the demonstrators claim that this absolutely lowers the living standards of Hong Kong people and disrupts normal trade relations. So I think you're going to have a series of demonstrations continuing for the indefinite future. The question is there any possibility that these demonstrations catch fire and in fact China as a whole? I think at this point the answer is probably not, but the Hong Kong demonstrators certainly hope that it will.
And what happens if that happens?
Well, then you've got an absolutely unknowable situation with dissent morphing into actual political opposition demonstrations in different cities in China. That would be a catastrophic situation for the Chinese government to deal with. But they would deal with it, given their current leadership, in the most ruthless manner possible. So let's hope it doesn't get that far.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about remembering here, you know, what happened at Tiananmen Square. We're talking here
right.
about, and we're talking about, obviously, China's willingness to round up and put into re-education camps, concentration camps, the Uyghur people, millions of them now. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting to me in 2019, with everything that we know about what's happening around the globe, to recognize that communist China is, on the humanitarian front, such a horrible bad actor, and in terms of justice, such a horrible bad actor, and that no one from the outside seems to have any real influence in China. Is that an accurate perception?
Well, I think it is. I don't think any foreign country is in the position now to change China's system of government. Although the Chinese Communist Party itself insists that all of these troubles in Hong Kong have been stirred up by the United States and other Western powers out of malice towards China. But the Hong Kong demonstrations don't have anything to do with American influence. It's purely local born. And so this claim by the Communist Party is quite absurd, that it won't stop them making it.
All right. David Ankman and I are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Turkey, which is continuing to receive Russian military equipment. We're going to talk about Iran trying to seize a British tanker. And if we have time, we're going to talk about what's going on in Northern Ireland. We'll be right back. Continuing my conversation with Dr. David Ankman from Godspeed Magazine. David, let's turn our attention to Turkey. It seems strange to me that a NATO ally would be receiving Russian military equipment. So remind me what NATO is and why I might think this is strange.
Well, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, was set up in 1949 after Russia tried to starve out the enclave of West Berlin by the siege of Berlin, which led, of course, to the Berlin airlift. And so Turkey was a willing member of NATO for many, many years and was a staunch bastion of NATO on the southeast corner of Europe, preventing the Russians from going into the Middle East through Turkey. Turkey was, that is. But the problem is that Turkey, under the nationalist leadership of Erdogan, has become progressively estranged from the West, from the United States, and from Europe, and therefore much more prone to Russian assistance and cooperation than previously thought. So Turkey is now in a position where it will get weapons that could potentially be a threat to NATO aircraft that are in service with different NATO member states.
Okay, so I think maybe we'll leave that story there because I expect it to continue to develop unless you think there's something more there we should talk about, because I would love to get your reaction and input on Iran trying to seize a British tanker.
Right. It's a very interesting story. I mean, the stakes have really increased in tension between the United States and Iran ever since President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear disengagement treaty he pulled out last year. That was a treaty signed by President Obama. Well, actually, it wasn't literally signed, but it was approved by President Obama. And believe it or not, this particular treaty has become an issue in the ongoing revelations from the former British ambassador to Washington, Sir Kim Darroch, who revealed, or at least who said in some classified memoranda to the United Kingdom government, that the reason that Trump pulled out of the Iran deal was to spite President Obama, which is an incredibly sort of rash accusation and something that must surely have annoyed Trump hugely. So now we've got a situation where the European powers, basically France, Germany, and the UK, which is still in the EU, are trying to persuade the Iranians to ratchet down their hostile rhetoric towards the United States and try to persuade the United States to give the original Iran nuclear deal a bit of leeway. And I don't think it's going to persuade President Trump, but you never know. The Europeans keep hoping it will.
Yeah, David, I just feel like it's a, I mean, I would say it's a powder keg, but it's more like an oil barrel, right? That is, it almost has a lit fuse. And it's hard for me to imagine how, as Iran becomes more and more isolated and more economically desperate, you know, how they're not prone to diplomacy in the way we think of diplomacy in the West. And yet, yeah, I find myself just kind of at a loss to imagine what the way forward is. It's a little bit like, you know, the conversation that we had about Hong Kong. It's really difficult for me to see how this works itself out diplomatically. And yet that's obviously my hope, my ardent, ardent hope.
Well, yes, it's an admirable hope. But the thing about the Iran nuclear deal was that it was not designed to prevent Iran from spreading its influence to neighboring Middle East countries, which it continues to do by supporting the Houthi rebels in Yemen, for example. It was purely intended to limit Iran's ability to get nuclear weapons. It seems to have done that, but it doesn't seem to have restrained Iran's behavior regionally. And that's, I think, what President Trump is particularly annoyed about and wants to stop.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's pivot a little closer to home for you. Let's just talk about, again, let's do a little geography for people who, you know, don't completely remember the relationship of the British Isles. So let me frame it that way. And then you give us a little tour of the British Isles and then tell us what we're talking about in Northern Ireland today.
Well, Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom, and it's that way because it was originally, the northern part of Ireland was populated by a massive influx of Scottish-originated Protestants in the 15th and 16th centuries. And these Protestants had been defiantly in charge of most of the levers of political power until the Troubles, when the Catholic minority in Northern Ireland began to protest in the 1960s for more rights. That led to a coalition government between the Protestants, basically, and the Catholics, which went fine for a few years. But 2 years ago, the coalition administration in Stormont, which is the location of the Northern Irish Parliament, broke down. So all of a sudden, the British government is finding that it has to impose direct rule on Northern Ireland, which has led, for example, to the imposition of UK rules about abortion and same-sex marriage to the people of Northern Ireland, who would never have voted for that, but they don't have any option because they have had a functioning government for 2 years.
Okay, and so now we have some Brexit implications of all of this.
We do indeed.
What would those be?
Well, the interesting thing about Northern Ireland is that the people of Northern Ireland, on the whole, voted to remain in the EU. They think it's an advantage to have good relations, commercial relations with the Irish Republic, just down the border, just across the border line between where they are and the Republic of Ireland starts. And they don't support Brexit at all, except that the Protestant ruling or the majority party in Northern Ireland, the DUP, which is the Democratic Unionist Party, they are strongly in favor of Ireland, Northern Ireland remaining in the EU, but also, even more important, they want to remain part of the UK. So the Brexit risk in this whole operation is that, in fact, you might have a breakup of both the British and the Northern Irish fear that there might be a breakup of the whole relationship of Northern Ireland to the UK as a result of continuing Brexit negotiations with the EU. It's a very uncertain situation.
Okay, so I think that what you and I have really talked about today are lots of opportunities for Christians to be praying that peace would flourish, not only in human relationships, but in these relationships at a very high level, which affect lots and lots of people. So, David, thank you so much for being with us, as always. I think that, my prayers are heightened for the people in Hong Kong and their relationship to China, the people in Turkey and their relationship to all of us in NATO, the people of Iran in their relationship to the rest of the world, and now this sort of heightened concern for all kinds of folks in the British Isles, including certainly those in Northern Ireland. David Aikman, thank you so much for being with us today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you very much, Carmen.
What a blessing. All right, we'll be right back. I think I'm reminded in that conversation with David Aikman that as citizens of the Kingdom of Heaven, although we are concerned and concern ourselves with the issues of nation states today, you know, our heartbeat has to be the heart of the Kingdom of God. And so, you know, maybe I'll just ask, what's breaking your heart today that you know breaks the heart of God? And whatever that is, apply yourself to bringing grace to bear in that relationship or that situation. Because you can't go wrong if you become the maker of peace where there is currently hostility. Jesus died in order that the dividing walls of hostility would be brought low between us as believers. And so if there is an opportunity for reconciliation today, go get after it. Have a great day and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.